One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
This is Ross Coulthart, and you are listening to That UFO Podcast.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to That UFO Podcast. I'm very excited to say a guest I had on last month who had a wonderful reaction from all of you newer to the UFO topic is back joining me today for a follow-up. Some things have changed in that time. I have the Associate Professor of Teaching Philosophy at Ohio State University, an alleged CIA mole. I've got Dr. Stephen Brown joining me on the podcast. Stephen, welcome back.
Yeah, I'm playing this like really elaborate like 7D chess thing where I'm like, aliens are real. We should take them very seriously. We should get transparency from the government. And somehow that makes me a mole. I don't know.
Yes.
I mean, I don't know. Whatever. Like it's this is actually one of the things I want to talk to you about. We've talked a little bit ahead of time. Mm. One of the things I want to talk about is kind of the state of the UFO community and how it's difficult for us to make progress because we're so divided against ourselves. But, you know, I think I started blathering from the beginning last time, but I at least want to let you talk a little bit this time.
No, that's fine. Yeah, I think last time you went on a good hour and 45-minute rant, and then I said hi.
That seems about accurate, yeah.
But listen, no, a few things, because this is very much a follow-up episode. If anyone's picking this up now, though, and hasn't heard that previous one, I suggest you definitely go back and listen to it. But for the benefit of those folks, Stephen, Your presentation that I had watched from a few months ago was titled Thinking Critically and Open-Mindedly About the Nazca Mummies. And yourself and myself, we spoke about your work and research on those mummies that have been found and presented by various folks, including Jaime Massan and co. And you were looking at these, and correct me if I'm wrong, with a skeptical eye, but with a view of there's something here worth looking at, and potentially these bodies, or some of them, could at least be truly alien species, whatever alien may mean, non-human. Yeah. Is that right?
Yeah, good. So one of the things that we should get clear about is this is just me, again, being an annoying philosopher, like, what does the term skeptical mean? What does the term critical mean in these contexts, right? Because sometimes people, especially people who embrace the term skeptic, they equate this with a certain kind of materialist view of the world, right? Like, everything's made up of protons, neutrons, electrons, and we can explain everything in terms of these kind of deterministic or semi-deterministic laws of physics, and that's kind of the worldview, right? And one of the reasons I, you know, like philosophy, I have a background in philosophy of religion, is calling some of the assumptions of that worldview into question, right? You know, it's not obvious that the world is made up only of protons, neutrons, and electrons. There are remaining puzzles about consciousness, for instance, that are very real in the world of neuroscience and philosophy of mind. And, right, like, you have very, very sharp people. Like David Chalmers is one of my philosophical heroes, who are proposing ideas like panpsychism, like perhaps everything is conscious in some at some level, and then, you know, the reason you get complex minds like ours is by configuring the basic constituents of the world in the right kind of way, and then you get a complicated mind like ours. So I'm very comfortable embracing the term skeptic, or in trying to be critically minded, as long as we don't equate that with this kind of reductive, naturalistic kind of worldview, right? Because so all of this to say, yes, like one of the things I've been calling into question as I've moved into this weird UFO alien world, one of the things I've been calling into question is this assumption that just basically everybody has, that any explanation involving aliens is off the table, right? And, you know, so one of the things I do at the beginning of that, you know, critically open-minded about the Nazca mummies video is I point at there are interesting arguments for the possibility of aliens as an available explanation of some of the things that we're seeing, right? Like, we've already got the Fermi paradox, we've got the Drake equations, right? Like, we've got this kind of preliminary data indicating that there are enough stars, there's been enough there's enough planets, there's been enough time for there to be the development of fully technologized civilizations that have plenty of time to get to our planet from wherever they came from, as long as they're within our galaxy, without even assuming the possibility of faster than light travel. And then if you assume the possibility of faster than light travel, then just even more options are on the table, right? And so, yeah, like, sometimes people who call themselves skeptics kind of seem to think that part of being a skeptic is ruling out hypotheses like that, whereas I want to be skeptical about that part of their skepticism, right?
Sure.
Like, it seems like we can't rule those things out, but they do need to be on the table. And yeah, as I looked at the Nazca mummies, from what I knew at the time, when I made that video, which was last September, I think, was when I made that, September, October was when I originally made that video. I believe that the best explanation on the table was that the bodies of the, what I called now the J types and the M types, the ones that look like Josefina, which were like the ones that presented in the Mexico hearing, and the ones that look like Maria, which is the larger bodies with the elongated heads and tridactyl hands and feet, that the best explanation of those was aliens. Now, my view has changed based on data, right? you know, some of the data has been floating around for a while. This llama skull hypothesis has been floating around for a while, right? Everyone's known that there are some really striking similarities between parts of a llama skull and the skulls of the J types. But there had been responses to those from certain researchers who had looked at these, like, no, there are some dissimilarities between those skulls and these skulls. And, you know, so one of the things I was trying, I've been trying to do since that video came out, right? One of the things I've been trying to do is talk to the researchers, get the data, put the data in front of other experts, and try to get their feedback. So yeah, even as recently as the last time I was speaking to you, I still thought that the leading hypothesis was alien body, coherent alien body. But yeah, I hope to have, and I think I've always done this, right? Say, kind of, here are the options, right? Like, it's either a modern hoax, or it's a it's an alien, or it's some kind of an ancient, like a ritual doll or something, right? And I've mostly been kind of throwing that option away, right? Like, not taking it very seriously, as most of the people in the space have. And I just released another video based on a, it's just a recording of a lecture that I gave at the Roswell UFO Festival a couple of weeks ago, last weekend, I think it was. And not this past weekend, but the weekend prior. And in there, I make rather a lot of noise about this false dichotomy, right? That basically everyone, including me, has been approaching this as either it's a modern hoax or it's an alien, right? And there's been this other option on the table for a while, like, or it's an ancient ritual doll, right? A ritual doll is just kind of this term that people have been using. It's not clear to me what they are. And we should talk about what I think they might be,
sure,
and why we think that. But this is like, and again, I just want to emphasize to everybody, my previous video was kind of a playful, silly kind of hang out with my students and chat about the arguments and entertain them with the possibility that there might be aliens in Peru, right? What I'm trying to do now is something much more data-driven, much more science-driven. And yeah, again, people like to point out that I'm not a scientist. I'm not a scientist. But the people who I am working with are really real scientists. like professional, very skilled, highly educated people who are working in state-of-the-art labs, top of their field. Like, these are real people. And I know there's a problem right now, which is that they have requested, for reasons which we need to discuss, that their names not be made public. Right. And that does create a problem. And it's a problem all across ufology, right? Like, the people who know the things, the people who know the data are often not willing to go public, because there are real world consequences of being a person who is seen as taking these issues seriously at all. Right.
Tell me about it. Yep.
Yeah. Go ahead. Yeah. Right. So that's one of the, anyways. So I don't know. I'm blathering again, but yes. So I have these kind of, now there's two videos up about, on my channel about the Nazca mummies. One of them is the older one where I'm trying to defend that they're aliens. And then there's the new one, which is now embedded, you know, I'm kind of deeply embedded with all the data and all of the people and all of the science and all that. Suggesting that the better way to think about them is as ancient archaeological objects. So I distinguish between several different types. The two most important ones are the M types, the big ones that are human sized and very, very human similar, and then the J types. And I believe now that the J types, here, let me show you my little friends here, right? I have my 3D model of Josefina, right? Here's Josefina. Right. I believe that Josefina and the ones that look like her are assembled out of multiple, the body parts of multiple species. That's what they
are. And just, Stephen, just for those on the audio platforms, the smaller ones look more like mini ETs, but skinny.
Yes.
Those are the small ones that you saw mini on camera ETs, a lot at the hearings and stuff.
Mini ETs, but skinny. And what? This is like maybe 2 feet tall, something like that. Or, I don't know, centimeters?
yeah, but foot and a half, something like that. Yeah, foot, 2 feet. Yeah, we'll go for that.
Something like that. I would want to measure. Anyways, I think those are constructed. And you know, unfortunately, one of the ambiguities of the video that I just released is people are interpreting me as saying that the M types, the big ones, are constructed, and I do not believe those are constructed. Right, like those are fully coherent bodies with odd features in the skull, hands, and feet. Right, and it's an open question what explains the odd features of the skull, hand, and feet. But they have not been assembled from scratch. Right? Like they're like these things. Seem to have been, although more to talk about here. But yeah, does that make sense? So
yeah, yeah.
I just want to, you know, clarify that as much as I can here. I definitely do not believe that the M types are constructs. They might be modified in some way, either ancient or modern. I personally, I don't know what they are. If I had to bet, I would say ancient modification of some kind. But I don't know yet. Right.
Is that something like, and again, to a layman, you hear about skull elongation in some cultures, yeah. Something like that.
Right. Okay. So, let's take modern hoax off the table for the time being.
Sure.
Right? We can come back to modern hoax, and let's talk about M types. Right. So the big ones, they have elongated skulls, and apparently the volume of those skulls is a little larger than you would expect it to be for a normal human skull, and maybe for an elongated skull. One of the things that we need better information on is what exactly skull binding does to the volume of the skull, right? Because there's a kind of preliminary argument that if you take a skull and squish it, then you've changed its shape, but not its volume, right? But if you look just at photographs of elongated skulls, some of them are very long, right? Like some of them seem to have a larger volume than and not just a change in shape. So more data required on studying these skulls that we know are bound. And one of the reasons we know they're bound, apparently, so this is coming from Dr. Hernandez at the University of Ica, which is, you know, they're right next to this area where these Paracas skulls were found in Peru. So they've been studying these things for a long time. And I'm just kind of taking his word for this for the time being, right? Like, apparently on the bound skulls, there are signs of binding. So there are kind of like marks in the bone from the binding. And apparently there are some differences in the way that the suture lines in the skulls, look, from ordinary skulls, because if you squeeze them, then the sutures, show up differently. That's what he says, and more data required. Right. But let's just set aside some of that complexity for the time being. We know you can make an elongated skull by binding it, right? So it does that explain the M-type skulls? Hard to say. More research required, right? Mm-hmm. So some people are saying, yes, they could be entirely be explained by skull binding. Maybe a different kind of skull binding than the Paracas used, some kind of better form of skull binding. Or maybe it can't be explained by skull binding. So open question there, right? But there's at least a hypothesis on the table where you could elongate a skull. Like we know you can elongate skulls by skull binding, right?
Yep.
So that's one available explanation is skull binding for the skulls. There's other things that are different about the skulls. There are no external ears. You could cut off the ears, right? Either when that person was alive or after that person died. You can't do skull binding after they died, right? That means if that skull is long and it's because of skull binding, then that had to happen from infancy, like from the moment they were born or shortly thereafter, you would have to bind that skull because you want to prevent the soft spot from fusing, right? That's how you get the elongated skulls. So there's no way that the elongated skulls of the M types can be explained by anything modern or postmortem. That had to be done in the childhood of the source organism for whatever that thing is, right? So either, you know, physical manipulation or genetic manipulation or something like that, hybridization of some kind, right? Like cross species chimeras or like whatever your explanation is going to be, that has to be during the lifetime of the M types, right? Like from the very beginning of them, from infancy. It's still an open question about the hands and the feet, right? Structurally, if you just look at the bones that are in there, most of them are compatible with the hypothesis that you cut off the pinky and the thumb, and you slit down in between these two fingers, right? Most of them have 1, 2, 3, 4 phalanges. If this becomes a phalange, right, by slicing this thing, that explains most of them. Now, there's at least one of them, Maria, which has an additional bone on the end. So in addition to slicing, you would have to presumably cut off the tip of this, cut off the last two bones of a different being, and attach it somehow, again, mm-hmm. either during the lifetime or post-mortem, right? Now, that, in principle, that modification, if it's a physical modification, that, in principle, could be done now. Right. Like you could take two mummies and you could cut the last one and you could cut the last two and you could glue it on and wrap it and cover the seam mm-hmm. somehow. That in principle could be done now. And I people are mad at me, right, because of trying to speak clearly about what the possibilities here. That is a possibility, right? Based on the number of bones and the shape of the bones and things like that. Do we know that's what happened? No. Right. Like it's possible, just given the bone structure, that that's a modern modification. It's possible that it's an ancient modification. It's possible that it's a genetic modification. All those options are currently on the table, right? But you can't do modern modification of skulls. So the skulls must be ancient somehow, right? Like when the thing grew.
Is it fair to say still, even in some of these options you're discussing, and I'm not trying to steer the conversation, though that's my job, that some of those options are still exotic in nature, you know, genetic modification from 1,000 years or 2,000 years ago, whatever, isn't something that was going on. So something had to be helping. So not saying that is what happened, but in these options, it's not just that people done this and it done, and this was the result.
Right. So it's important for us to at least consider the less exotic and the more exotic explanation, right? Yeah. So let's take modern hoax off the table for the time being. Let's just consider the ancient hypotheses, right? So you have, you know, less to more exotic explanations. The least exotic explanation is bind the skulls and slit the hands, either while they're still alive or after they die, right? Those are, like, we know they could do those things. Because it's, you know, we have ample record of skull binding, and, you know, cutting a hand is not that hard. Now, if you cut the hand while they were alive, that it would make the hand not work. Like, you couldn't use the hands anymore. If you slit this and you cut off the thumb and pinky, like, that person would not be able to use their hands. Mm. But they would look really cool. Right. You can imagine people waiting on them, right? And like always, like, feeding them and like just taking care of all their needs, right? That's what you'd have to do if it were done during their lifetime. So that would be, we'll just say, like a body mod, right? Like a real world body mod. We know they're doing body mods because we have the elongated skulls, right? Bound skulls. So this could be a lifetime body mod, or it could be some kind of a burial ritual. Mm-hmm. after they died, they modified the hands because it was important for the mummies to look like this, right? The mummification mm-hmm. process, or the, not mummification, but the preparation process, we'll just say mummification, right? The preparation and drying out of the bodies you could do the modification then. So those are two ancient hypotheses. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And then you have the exotic ones, like genetic engineering or hybridization with something else. And me personally, right now, I'm inclined to go with the less exotic hypothesis here.
Sure.
Right? I don't see yet any conclusive reason why we should be pushing for the more exotic hypothesis, right? That, like, the less exotic hypothesis seems sufficient. An advanced form of skull binding and surgical modification, either during or after the lifetime, seems sufficient to explain the data. Now, people disagree with me on that. We need more data. I really don't know. There are puzzles in the air, like more data, more data, more data, right? But my personal hunch is that the less exotic hypothesis is going to be sufficient. Now, look, I would love it to turn out that we go and we do DNA and we really examine the hands and it turns out that there's genetic modifications. Like, that would be really cool. But we do not yet have data sufficient to establish that.
Okay. So, well, that's the big ones.
Yeah.
The little ones you believe were constructed.
Yeah.
Little thin ETs. That's the ones. Have we got a hypothesis for a why these were constructed, when they were constructed?
Can we talk about how first?
Go for it. Yep. How?
Let's talk about how, because the why is presumably the same for this and the big ones, mm-hmm. right? Under the ancient hypothesis. So let's do the how real quick on these, right? Because this is a lot more work than, I don't know. Skull binding takes a whole lifetime.
But, and the one you're holding, Stephen, is also a replica and not one of the actual specimens.
This is a 3D print, yes.
Just to point that out to people.
Yeah, I do not. I'm not handling one of what I take to be a potentially a priceless archaeological artifact. I am not waving this around in front
of me. To be fair, some of the folks in charge of those priceless artifacts previously didn't handle them too well and snapped a finger off, so...
There is damage that has been done to multiple of the bodies. That is correct. And one of the reasons why I'm very serious now about talking about this ancient construction hypothesis, because a number of the objects that have been associated with this have been completely ignored as worthless, where we really need to take the possibility of ancient construction seriously, because if ancient construction is on the table, then some of these things which have been considered worthless and obviously hoaxes might not be worthless and obviously hoaxes. They might be other forms of biological, artistic, religious, whatever they are.
Sure. Right?
And that's why it's really important to me that this other option is on the table, that we really need to be taking seriously both the possibility that these are actually aliens or, you know, exotically modified humans or something like that, and that they might be archaeological objects, because, you know, it will entail treating some of them differently. Right. Mm. Okay. So, this thing is a 3D print of Josefina, which is the kind of first one that was revealed and the most data had been available on. There's better scans on some of the later ones now. But as I talk about in the video, and as many people have suspected, the skull of this seems to be a modified llama skull. We can see in the CT scans a thin spot right between her eyes, which is exactly as predicted. You'd have to grind this down on a llama skull. And if you look at the CT scans, you can see the grind. You can see the result of the grinding, which is the thinned area of the bone here. And you can actually see on some of the CT scans, you can see the kind of porous bone underneath, which seems to indicate that the smooth bone on top of it has been ground away. Now, we can't directly observe this because it's covered with the apparent skin, right? And then there's these patterns on the back of the skull, which seem to be the kind of fins that are left over if you cut off the back of the face of the llama skull. I have a llama skull right here. This is not a real llama skull. This is also a 3D print of a llama skull, right? But the idea is, right, here's these guys, right? The back part of the llama skull looks sort of like a face. And if you cut off enough parts of it, and you only have to add a couple of things, there will be two holes in the back of the skull if you cut this off here. So there are two panels that are here that you can see from the inside are glued on, not with any modern glue, but with like an ancient, at least compatible with ancient substance.
Something adhesive, basically, yeah.
Yep. Which you can create adhesives by boiling skin or bones. You would have to add a couple of bone panels here to create this mouth shape. But that's the only modification, the only additional modification, like adding things, right? You have to subtract a bunch of stuff, cut a bunch of stuff off, grind a bunch of stuff. And then you have to add two panels on the back and two pieces for the mouth, right? That's what you have to do to make this thing. And look, I think at this point, this argument is conclusive. People are upset that I think it's conclusive, but I do think it's conclusive, right? There have been several alleged differences between this skull and this one that have turned out upon further analysis not to be differences. I have been talking to the scientists who have been making the claims about the differences between the skull. Some of them are coming around to agreeing mm-hmm. that they are modified llama skulls, and some of them are not, right? So this is still in dispute, but I personally am comfortable with the conclusion, and my team is comfortable with the conclusion. Everybody on my team who used to believe that these were aliens now believes that they are that this is a modified llama skull. And we've all done that based on analysis of the data, the CT scan data. And there's also this additional data from proteomics, which is the study of proteins, which indicates that there are, in fact, llama proteins in the skull. Now, we're running into this problem right now, which is that some people are accusing us of studying some of the fakes, right? There's a real problem here, right? Which is there's not a canonical set of samples, right? That's like, these are the real ones, right? So Josefina is presumably one of the real ones, right? Mm-hmm. And no one has cut apart Josefina for obvious reasons. No one should cut apart Josefina for obvious reasons. If Josefina is a archaeological object or an alien, we shouldn't cut her up, right? We should study her non-destructively, right? Now, there are a bunch of loose skulls that look exactly like this and come yeah. from exactly the same source, right? That were obtained at the same time as Josefina, under all the same conditions as Josefina. Mm-hmm. So, like, they're not coming from somewhere else. They're coming from the same source. They're coming from the same batches, right? Like, when people obtained Josefina and Artemis and Paul and Luisa and all of the ones that everyone's taking seriously, there were also loose skulls that were obtained at the same time. Hold them next to each other. They look exactly the same. Same source, right? One of those loose skulls, not this one, because this is a different one, right? But there are a bunch of loose skulls, right? That are not just skulls; they also have the skin and stuff on them, right? And they also, from the same source, all the same features. They are, you know, they have been presumed by all of the people who believe that they are aliens to be of the same type, right? Yeah. And one of them has been opened. This is not it, but this is a 3D print represent. This is just this one 3D printed, but with it separated, so we can look at the inside. So this is not a 3D print of the one that has been opened, right? Just to be clear, right? But the one that has been cut opened came from the same source, same batch of purchases/, you know, whatever. I mean, they've been purchased, right? But yeah. for research purposes, and one of them has been cut open, right? So, and that's where the samples came from, is inside of that one. Now, right, you'll look around and some people are saying, well, look, this object that Steve has pictures of, if you look at the inside of that, and then you look at the inside of this fake one, they look exactly the same. That's consistent with the hypothesis that I'm proposing, or that my team is proposing, right? Which is that all of them are llama skulls. If they're all llama skulls, then when you cut one open, they'll all look like llama skulls on the inside. What the alternative hypothesis would need to do would be to show that there are any of the skulls which are different in some substantial way, right? And no one has done that. And in my view, no one can do that because I've seen the best data that we have, the best scans we have on all of the bodies. Well, that's not true. I haven't seen all the bodies, right? I've seen the best scans that we have on 6 of the J-type bodies, and they are all consistent structurally. They all have the spot between the eyes where the grinding would happen. They all have the spots in the back, the thin spots in the back where the panels would have to be added. They all have the jagged marks on the back, which would be the leftovers from the llama skull cuts. So one of the reasons I changed my mind is because in the original argument that I articulated in my first video, there's a claim made that there are no signs of grinding or cutting. Mm-hmm. And there are signs of grinding and cutting. That is not correct, right? There are signs of grinding and cutting. If you look at the CT on all of them, you can see where, you know, between the eyes where the grinding has been done, where the thinning has been done. And in the highest resolution scans, you can see the porous bone right underneath here, right? That seems to be exposed. That is sign of grinding, right? The little fin parts on the back of this that are causing this jagged shape on the back, that is sign of cutting. That there was the rest of the skull and it was cut off, which is why those little jagged bits are still there, right? So there are signs of manipulation. They are not exposed to the air. You can't look at them directly because they're covered with this skin of some kind, right? Yeah, does that make sense?
So, yeah.
And again, I want to articulate, people are going to say, Steve, who are you? You're a philosophy professor. You don't know how to read CT scans. I know. I'm sitting down with x-ray techs and professional surgeons who are going over the scans with me. And we're looking, you know, they were the ones who showed me some of these features, right? All I did was create the animation, right? But the analysis is being done by medical professionals and not just medical professionals, paleontologists and other folks that have relevant skills, veterinarians and anthropologists. And yeah, does that make sense?
Yeah. Can you speak this on something for me? As part of the problem, not exactly what you've experienced firsthand, that the science being done is so fragmented still that yeah. Some people are seeing some of this stuff. Other people have some of the other stuff. Other people have the originals, but won't let X, Y, or Z be done to them. And everything seems to be all over the place in terms of this still. So anything that is being done, either way, you can conclude on one set that you have something that definitely resembles a llama skull. There's cutting, there's grinding. We've got enough proof here to say the evidence shows these are ancient reconstructions for whatever reason, but of llama skulls and bits and pieces. However, yeah. Another totally separate group, but again, authentic group of scientists yeah. and academics could yeah. have another set of materials.
That's right.
And conclude something different. So then you've got two sets of scientists presenting to the public. We believe these are genuinely exotic, non-human, whatever. And another set saying, we believe these aren't, but they're actually, you know, you've got someone's made a wonderful cake. And off the back of that, they've made a few different batches of other cakes that look like the same cake, but they're telling yep. you they're all the same stuff, but you're never actually getting to check the original cake.
Well, so there is no original cake, right, in this right. case, right? There are a bunch of separate cakes, but fair enough, right? Like, and this is happening to me right now. I say I'm analyzing Josefina and Alberto and Artemis and Luisa and Paul and another loose skull that was scanned at the same time as Artemis. I'm analyzing those using CT, and we have this additional skull which has been cut open, which is being analyzed directly, samples taken out of that, right?
Yep.
And then, you know, we use the similarity in the structure to suggest that all of them are the same, right? That's the structure of the argument that I'm using, right? You know, there are other bodies out there, and people are examining those other bodies. You know, that creates problems, right? Yeah. Because one team might be looking at one body and another team might be looking at another body. So it's open to people who are concerned about this to say, well, they're not looking at the same objects, right? Mm-hmm. I actually said the same thing in my first video about the beings that were being studied by Flavio Estrada Morena. Now in that case, the one that he was calling the most attention to is clearly different than these ones, right?
Yep.
Like just obviously different than this in every way. It's not like this thing at all, except the same general like shape, right? Mm. But like the bone structure is entirely different. Like you understand what I'm saying, right? So mm-hmm. so yeah, there's a real problem here. And what we're trying, so here's what we're trying to do right now. What we're trying to do right now is work with the Latin American scientists to get a plan in place, right? So I'm talking especially closely to José Ríos López. I haven't yet talked to Zalza Benitez, but Ríos López has talked to Zalza Benitez on my behalf, and we're trying to network them. We're trying to talk to Dr. Zuniga and Dr. Hernandez and the others at the university in Ica, right? So the plan is to work with all of those parties at least. And hopefully with other parties that have bodies or specimens or whatever, like we want this to be as big tent as we can get it, right? Like we want to get past all the fighting and past all the factions and build, I think the best way to do this is to build it around the University of Ica, and try to get some kind of registry about how many bodies we have and what studies have been done on them and what samples have been taken and who's analyzed those. And we want to do that in a way that protects the privacy of the people who want to be kept private. And here's how we propose to do that, right? And we're working on this right now. What we're trying to do is get somebody at the University of Ica to be responsible for credentials vetting, right? And create the appropriate contracts, legal contracts, between researchers and hopefully the university. The idea is to have some kind of a clearinghouse, and to use hypothetically, we'll just say for now it is the university. That's my hope. I would like it to be the University of Ica, right? There's somebody at the University of Ica. They get the profiles of the researchers, right? Here's Anonymous Dave. And where that person works and what that person's education is and all that kind of stuff, what their publications are. They have a full CV of that person. Mm-hmm. Then they say, this person looks cool. This is a qualified researcher. And then there's a public version of their profile that's thin and anonymized, right? Yeah. Researcher number 027, right? And researcher number 027 has a PhD in this. Mm-hmm. From not a specific institution, but from an institution accredited by this accreditation body, right? That's an ambiguous enough thing that you couldn't track down who that person is. And they are working in this country, in this field, right? Something like that. Like an anonymized thing that lets people know what kind of a person is this, what kind of expertise that they have, right? Mm-hmm. But the University of Ica people, they know who they actually are and what their publication record is and all that kind of stuff, right? And that, I think, would provide a nice mechanism for us to have some public transparency and some real checks and balances to make sure that the bodies are being handled responsibly by responsible people, the samples are being handled responsibly by responsible people. There's also just a ton of legal issues involved right now, right? Like, taking samples from bodies across borders to get them analyzed is a legally treacherous thing to do, right? So we want to make sure as best we can that all of that is done above board, and that nothing is being smuggled, and we're not working with smuggled sources or anything like that, right? Like, so all of that is going to take some work because a lot of crazy stuff has happened here, right? So that's the proposal, right? The proposal is work with the Latin American scientists who have already been analyzing these things for many years, right? Like, a lot of people are mad at me. Who are you? You're this newcomer from America. And like, why are you ignoring what the people in these Latin American scientists have been studying them for 7 years have been saying? I'm not ignoring them. I'm working with them, right? We're trying to get some process in place for a responsible and transparent process that does still protect the privacy of the people who need their privacy protected.
That makes sense. So the Jaime Massan, who has been a big part of this, I've deliberately left it out so far. You've not mentioned him once yet in your conversation. You've named some of the scientists involved.
Yep.
And the folks you've not named, he's not one of them, you've hinted at. Why has Jaime Massan been left out of what you've said? And two, why doesn't he like you?
Okay, there's an obvious reason why Jaime is being left out of this. And it's funny, Jaime went on a rant about me this past Sunday, right, on his show. There's a certain irony in the degree to which he's yelling about the fact that I'm not a scientist, right? Because of course Jaime's not a scientist either, right? Jaime is a journalist, right? So Jaime is irrelevant, right? At the end of the day, Jaime's view, one way or the other, is like my view, only interesting in as much as it's informed by credentialed scientists, right? There's a version of this where Jaime isn't involved at all. There's no particular reason for Jaime to be involved. We're just the scientists, look at the samples, and we do this kind of process where there's some kind of researcher registry, an anonymized version made available to the public. And we go responsibly through this data following all the laws, and Jaime's not involved. Now, I'm not saying Jaime can't be involved. Maybe Jaime's involved in some way or another, and I'm very grateful that Jaime's brought attention to these things and made sure that they are taken seriously. I think that's correct. That's why I haven't spoken about him before, right? There's no need for him to be involved in the process I just described.
Yeah.
He can be if he would like to be, if it makes sense for him to be involved. He does have access to some of these bodies. And if those bodies are going to be responsibly studied, then, we should all work together to come up with a plan to make sure that all the bodies are registered, who studied the bodies and what's been done to each body. Like, there's some kind of exhaustive database about that, ideally, in my view, at the University of ICA. I think that's the best place to do it. Why is he mad at me? he's mad at me because I have been converted to the llama skull argument, to the llama skull hypothesis. And he thinks the llama skull hypothesis is absurd. That's why he's mad, right? Fair enough, right? Some of the things he said on that show are not factually accurate, right? There's some translation problems going on here, right?
Yeah.
English and Spanish translation problems. What I said is there is evidence that the bones that join the bones in the toes, for instance, and the bones in the knees have been joined by putting a natural fiber put into the hollow bones and then a glue wrapped around, a natural glue. I believe in the podcast that he recorded this past week that he said that I was suggesting that they had wires in them. I definitely don't think there are wires in them. If there are wires in them, they would show up white hot in all of the x-rays, right?
Yeah.
That's not what I said. I said fibers, not wires, right? I believe he suggested that I was saying that they were modern constructs. I am definitely not saying they're modern constructs, right? I am saying they are not. I am saying that these, the J types, the ones that look like Josefina, the short ones, are ancient constructs. I am not saying that the big ones, M types, are constructs at all. I am saying they are modified humans. I'm leaving modification open to all hypotheses, the exotic hybridization, genetic engineering hypotheses, all the way down to the more mundane, physically slicing the hands and binding the skulls, right?
Because
we don't know either way. We need better data on the skin and the muscles and the tendons and the DNA. Like, there's a lot of work left to do, to establish what's going on with the M types. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't want Jaime to be mad at me. I think we can all agree that these are objects that are fascinating, that are important, that need to be studied. I think we can all agree on what the studies are that need to be done, right? I think we can all agree on methodology and a registry of people who are studying them. I think we can all agree about the value of anonymity for the researchers who do not want to be publicly known as involved in something this contentious, right? And I think we can solve all of those problems if we are patient and kind and listen to each other and not yell at each other. Then I think we can get all of that done. And everybody at the end of the day will be happy. That's my goal. And I know that, you know, sometimes making everybody happy is impossible. But I really do think that if we have this other option on the table, nobody needs to be afraid, right? Like we can, if they're aliens, then trying to demonstrate that they are not aliens will prove that they are aliens, right? Like, yeah. That's the way this works. This is literally what happened to me. I was trying to prove that these are not llama skulls. Like, I gave it as much of a run for its money as I possibly could, right? And in trying to prove that these are not llama skulls, I proved to my own satisfaction that they are llama skulls. This is true for everybody else on my team, right? Surgeons, archaeologists, x-ray techs. We all came in thinking these were alien skulls. And then we dug into it deeper and found that they were llama skulls. So.
Okay. So I think it's fair to say you've put across very well why you've gone from where you were to where you are now. Yep. What I'd like you to kind of touch on is, for you, what are the enduring mysteries then still with these bodies? And maybe even, I'll just say it really bluntly, for anyone listening to this now, disappointed that, oh, Stephen Brown's ruined it a little bit for me. This guy came in totally new to the subject. We sounded like we had a friend, which I'm not saying you're not.
Yeah, yeah.
He's kind of dashed my hopes a little bit of the Ross and Rachel reunion here. It's not going to happen. You know, why do you think there's still cause for optimism that these, aside from you've mentioned obviously one, is there is potential for genetic manipulation or hybridization, which would almost definitely be something exotic, shall we say?
Yep.
Is there anything else you think actually these are still quite mysterious?
Yeah. Okay. So there's a number of enduring mysteries, and let's say that let me classify them a little bit. One of the enduring mysteries is under the assumption that the J types are constructs. All I've said so far is that we know what the skull is made of, right?
Mm-hmm.
What are the legs made of? What are the arms made of? And most importantly of all, what is the torso made of? And I say that because it looks like, based on what we're seeing, the leading hypothesis for what the torso is made of is a human infant, right? And that's a big deal, right? Because if that's true, and we can study this directly, right? Like, we can take samples, we can look at the bones in the CT, we can compare them to humans, right? We can imagine an appropriately sized human, right? Which is an infant. Like, this is a little guy, right? If this is a human, if the torso is a human torso, then it's a very little one. It's like a newborn human, right? Mm-hmm. Presumably a stillborn human or a human that dies in infancy. Like, we don't need to imagine like infant sacrifice or anything sure. like that, right? Like, it could, there a lot of infants die, right?
Yeah.
In the ancient world, a lot of infants die. This might turn out not to be a ritual doll at all. It might literally be an actual mummy, including removal of organs, right? This could end up being an extremely elaborate mummification technique for infants, right? In which they added the bones, the skull of a llama, presumably because they valued elongated skulls. And there wasn't time to develop the elongated skull of the infant because it didn't have chance to elongate. So you could replace that, right? And then the structure and form of this, which is now very puzzling. Why did they do this, right? Why did they add reptile skin, right? So that's a really deep mystery.
Yeah.
Under the kind of less exotic hypotheses, right? Like, what's this made of? If it's human, that's amazing. And we need to understand it. Hoax hypothesis. If it's human, right, then that means someone is messing with either infant mummies, which I do not think is possible given the brittleness of the bones,
mm-hmm.
or modern infants, right? Which would be
horrifying.
Yeah. And obviously extremely illegal. So like, we really, really, really need to get to the bottom of this case no matter what. Does this all make sense?
Yeah.
Now, so one of the enduring mysteries from the kind of minimalist, least exotic hypotheses is what this thing is made of. Is it a human? If it's a human, we really need to know. If it's a monkey or a chinchilla or something like that, then very interesting, but not as interesting, right? Because we're not talking about, human remains are more interesting than chinchilla remains, right? and need to be treated differently. So there's that question. Now, are there still aliens on the table? Yeah, there are still aliens on the table. There might still be things that indicate indicate the presence of alien contact, non-human contact, in this pre-Columbian Peruvian world. Right. The most obvious would be we find some body or some skull or something that isn't from this planet. Is that still on the table? Yeah, there are these skulls that are very strange looking. And who knows? Like, we haven't analyzed all of them. Like, one of the things that is just so hard to explain to people who aren't close to this yet is there are a lot of objects, right? And one of them might turn out to be alien parts, right? Like, that's still on the table. It's still on the table that the M types turn out to be genetically modified humans, or, you know, genetically related to humans, or something very similar to a human, but genetically different from a human, right? That is still on the table. Claims have been made there that seem a little premature as far as, like, we ran the DNA and some percentage of it is not identified, and therefore it's from someplace else. There are alternative explanations, right? Reading ancient DNA is extremely difficult to do. I do not know how to do this. I clearly do not know how to do this, right? We are working now with really high level genetics people, right? Like top of the line genetics people working on ancient DNA. That's what we want, right? We don't have anybody on the team yet that's top of the line and working on ancient DNA. One of the problems mm-hmm. is like getting enough specificity, right?
Sure.
But we have access to those people. Like, we're trying to get people looped in to getting that kind of information. So if these are genetic hybrids, or if they're aliens, the M types, it will come out in the wash. We will demonstrate it as best we can, right? So nobody needs to be afraid that we're ignoring that hypothesis. That hypothesis is being tested along with all the other ones, right? Another mystery, which I didn't discuss in my video and should have, it was just an oversight because I hadn't had enough sleep because I was trying to get things done, is the metals, right?
Yeah.
So there are these metallic plates that are implanted in the skin of all of, not all of them. There are specimens of all types that have metal implants, right? There are also specimens of all types that do not have metal implants. The metal implants are in different places. They are in different shapes. There are some similarities between some of the specimens. The metal plates are all over the place as far as shape and position and across the different types, right? So what do we make of those metal plates? Claims have been made about the metallurgy, right? That there are metals in those plates that shouldn't be there, given the degree of metallurgy available mm-hmm. to the Nazca people or the Paracas people at the time. This is a testable hypothesis. It needs to be tested, right? There is some preliminary claims that have been made about osmium, which is an extremely weird and exotic metal that's very difficult to extract. And if there's any significant amount of osmium in the metal plates, that itself is indication of something very strange going on yeah. in Peru, even if, right, like, it, so let's assume Josefina is a llama skull glued to a chinchilla body, glued to various bones from monkeys and llamas, and with some reptile skin glued onto her. Let's say that's what she is, right? Mm-hmm. Well, if this plate has osmium in it, then that's still evidence of some kind of very unusual, potentially non-human contact in ancient Peru, right? So that's still on the table. And then there's the big thing, which is staring us all in the face, right? Which is, if this is an ancient construct, why would they make these things?
Yeah. Right?
And one of the interesting things about this is we have artwork. Oh, I don't have the book here. It's at my house. But we have artwork from approximately the same time period, approximately the same space, paintings of beings that look kind of like this. Long torso, long head, big eyes, tridactyl hands and feet, right? Like, we have paintings of those. And there's an open question in interpreting those paintings, right? How intentional is it that it looked like that? Yeah. Did they just try to draw something that looked human, but they stylized it because stylization is cool, and that's the way they stylized a human, right? That's an open question about these paintings. If this thing turns out to be an ancient construct, no, they weren't just trying to make something that looked human, stylized. Yeah. No, 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 no. They were modifying bodies, maybe human bodies, right? If this turns out to be a human body, then the idea that this artistic thing is just the way they expressed human bodies goes out the window, right? Because if they modified human bodies to look like something else, which we know they did with the M types, right? Minimally by, well, under the assumption that the M types have been physically modified in the past, right? Then we know that they were modified with the intent of creating long skulls and tridactyl hands, right? We know that these were made with the intent, the J types, with the intent of giving long skulls, big eyes, tridactyl hands and feet, and reptile skin, because those have all been very intentionally built into what this object is, right? So now you really have to ask, why are the Nazca people body modding themselves with the M types to look like tridactyl, elongated skull, large-eyed reptilian things? Why are they building the J types potentially out of their infants to give them long skulls, big eyes, tridactyl hands and feet, and reptile skin, right? Like, boy, that's a real mystery, right? And, I think personally that is every bit as interesting a mystery as why are these things, well, I don't know, approximately as interesting a finding as these are actual bodies of aliens or actual genetically hybrids, right? So, so what I want to say here is the more exotic hypotheses are obviously fascinating in kind of pointing at, like, if we have an alien body, that's alien related, right? If we have a hybrid body that's hybrid alien and human, that's alien related. But even the less exotic hypotheses are alien related, where we use alien very broadly, right? Like, alien just means other. Like, they're clearly trying to, under the less exotic versions, they are clearly trying to modify their own bodies and the bodies of whatever these J types are made out of to look like things that are very similar to what we now think of as aliens. And that is a really big and important question that needs to be on the table. And yeah, does that make sense?
Absolutely. So, couple of questions off the back of that.
Yeah.
Let's go with the hoax one first.
Yeah.
If these are hoaxed, and again, I appreciate you're not a scientist, but you're working with them and you know more about this than I do. Is someone not wasting a highly specialized talent by being able to trick so many scientists and confuse so many people en masse with all of this stuff? Or is it just actually something that's really simple to do?
Well, yeah, it's not simple to do.
That is all for part one. Part two will be out in the next couple of days. You can listen to this episode already in full ad-free and with no sponsors for less than the price of a coffee. If you head on over to Patreon or Apple, you can subscribe to the podcast for less than the price of a coffee or take up the 2 weeks free trial that are available on those platforms. You can head on over to Spotify and search That UFO Podcast Premium and get access to this episode in full, no adverts, no sponsorships, and also with some extra bonus content as well. Thanks for listening, folks.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
Confused on where to start with weight loss medication? See the lowest prices available with or without insurance for Wegovy, Zepbound, and more at TryLifeMD.com. 95% of LifeMD patients said starting their weight loss journey was simple. Listen to Tara's story after losing 42 pounds.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. I had gone from 237 to 195. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
Get your free insurance benefits check in minutes right now at TryLifeMD.com. Nearly 96% of patients said they would recommend the LifeMD program to anyone who wants to lose weight. Get started right now at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Hey there, are you sitting down? Good, because Wayfair's biggest sale of the season is here and you can shop it right from your couch. It's Wayfair's Black Friday in July sale, and it's on now. Right now, you can score up to 80% off everything home at Wayfair. Snag outdoor furniture and decor at up to 60% off. Get area rugs for every room at up to 80% off. And refresh your sleep space with up to 60% off bedroom furniture. Plus, score amazing doorbuster deals and 24-hour surprise flash deals. And get it all with fast and free shipping on everything. Yep, even the big stuff. Right to your door. These are Wayfair's lowest prices of the summer. And did we mention they only last 5 days? So don't wait. Head to Wayfair.com today to score up to 80% off Wayfair's biggest sale of the season before it fizzles out. Shop Wayfair's Black Friday and July sale now through July 28th, only at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org. One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.